Are you tired of being confused and frustrated by your business books? Do you want to do your own business bookkeeping but don't know where to begin? I can help. My name is Crystal Wombeck and I am a certified bookkeeper. I'm the creator of the Simple Bookkeeping Program. This online, work at your own pace video course will take you from confused to confident when it comes to your business books. Log into accountingbycrystal.com and sign up today.
Why is the shopping cart always in the top right of the screen?
How do companies predict my purchases?
Why do prices end in 9?
Why do fast food companies use red and yellow in their logos?
Why do restaurants always have one expensive menu item?
Researchers, marketers, and very curious people seek the answers for how we make decisions and how we choose products. ClickSuasion finds the secrets that companies use and shares them with you.
Why do I feel better when I bought the last remaining airline ticket?
How do I make choices based on colors and fonts?
Welcome to ClickSuasion. This is your host, Michael Barbera. We're here with Manny Anikal. Manny is currently the founder and CEO of TNL Media. He has previously spent his time with SVP Marketing, with Kip, Zynga, Microsoft, EA, and several other organizations, which pretty much comes around to gaming, partnerships, and marketing. Manny, tell us a little more about what you do as a branding expert in partnerships and marketing, etc.
Well, thank you very much for that introduction and very happy to be on the show. I don't like to say I'm an expert in anything. I just love the gaming industry and having worked in this space for 13 years now, I have the gray hair and the blood pressure to prove it. I've been a lifelong gamer since I was 7 years old, got my first console, and I'm old now, so you can do the math. And so I've been a gamer for over 3 decades, and I love to tell my mom that all those hours of playing Nintendo finally paid off. And I work in the game industry. But so what I essentially do and what I've done for, you know, across the board, as you mentioned, with companies like Xbox or EA or Zynga or Keep or Major League Gaming, where I was most recently, has really helped to connect brands and agencies into, you know, the gaming ecosystem and what the various platforms are. You know, I first started off in dynamic advertising, you know, ads that changed out inside games like Madden and FIFA, moved on to, establishing a media platform like we did with EA's Global Media Sales Organization. I then ran brand advertising at Zynga, so that was, you know, social and media integration, like games like Farmville and Cityville. Keep, I got mobile experience, so now, you know, you're very familiar with rewarded advertising, watch this video, get 10 coins, or complete this transaction, run 5 miles and get something sent to you. But the esports side is really helping, you know, brands understand the opportunity and engage audience, you know, reaching that young demographic that's not watching TV or really spending in the areas they want to spend on. So that's where I've been focused on in the past in the various areas and verticals and the companies that I've been associated with.
So let's let the listeners do some math. What was your first gaming system?
I honestly think that probably 1% of your listeners would know this. So this is a everyone says, you know, Atari is kind of the big launch for video games, and then Nintendo with their first system in 1984 after that. But I actually predate even Atari, and my first system was the Intellivision, which I believe got released in 1981, if my math is correct. So the Intellivision was a very old system, pre-Atari days, and very difficult to use and not very user-friendly. As a matter of fact, I even go before that had a Texas Instruments, which was really a computer, which also played games as well. So I'm an old, old man.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that at all. Age is only as old as you feel.
Absolutely.
So when you were with Zynga and you were the director of brand advertising, how did your role influence, say, sales, branding, and the UX departments?
I would say that my job in Zynga running brand sales, which is, you know, talking to the ad agencies of the world, you know, working with brands like McDonald's, T-Mobile, Farmers Insurance, Coca-Cola, you know, brands understand that, hey, you know, we've got a monthly user base of 100 million people, you know, almost 30 to 40 to 50 million people playing on a daily basis. You know, they're playing for, you know, sometimes, you know, over an hour every single day. They're coming back multiple times a day. So had to sell that into brands and agencies. But honestly, my most difficult challenge was selling internally at Zynga, because at that time when I was there, when the rocket ship was going up and we were making millions of dollars a day on our transactions, it was very hard for me to just get engineering time or an art director's time to say, hey, could we please take, you know, $500,000 or $1 million from this brand, which is absurd to spend in the gaming space because you didn't see that amount of budgets to then spend for one day when, you know, those engineers could basically make a new game feature that would potentially produce $50,000 a day in revenue in perpetuity. So I would say that was, you know, kind of my role, what I did at Zynga externally, but really it was a much more challenging role internally to, you know, get that sale done because of a dev time. But then I also needed to prove that, hey, you know, having McDonald's in the game, having Cascadian Farms in the game, or having Farmers Insurance in the game actually will help drive the value of the user experience. And fans, ultimately, once we started doing it, kept asking, okay, when's the next one coming? When's the next one coming? So that really helped settle the challenge internally, where we always said, Fred Zynga, it was all about user experience. It was all about our users. You know, Mark Pincus, CEO, said, never forget, it's all about user delight. And we had, you know, I love play signs all over the Zynga headquarters. So that was extremely important to us as a company.
Now, we can always plan, and we can plan for days and for months to have the most perfect product, but eventually we have to launch and we have to give the users the chance to have that experience. How much does, say, gamification strategy change once you start receiving data on the user's behavior?
That's a fantastic question. You know, I think the biggest thing that I will take away from Zynga for the rest of my life, outside of being able to physically work almost 100 hours a week for a year, which I don't recommend anyone actually doing, or fly 100,000 airline miles in that same period. But the thing that I'll take away is, you know, what I call, you know, the triple D's, which is, you know, data-driven decisions. And at Zynga, I jokingly said, and to some degree, it wasn't even a joke, which is that, you know, we would schedule bathroom breaks, you know, within an Excel spreadsheet. I mean, everything that we did at Zynga was completely driven by data and what the user experience showed us. So essentially, the biggest thing that, you know, Mark Pincus told us was essentially, you know, I won't say the not safe for work word, but you could insert that here and say, insert word it, and then just test it, you know, which is essentially just launch a feature, launch a game, whatever. We have the platform, we have millions of users. Let's just go ahead and test it and see if it works. Like, we don't need to spend $100 million on a console game to develop it, seeing if the idea of, hey, you know, this fantastical, magical, mythical world is going to make $1 billion. We don't need to take that bet. We can release those features, you know, on a daily basis, on even multiple days a basis. We could tweak that, you know, throughout the day, saying, okay, increase the price by 1%, or is this color doing better than this color? I mean, the amount of A/B testing we did was incredible. So, to long answer to your question, it's essentially as soon as we started getting data back, we would adjust constantly on the fly, and we'd have systems and algorithms that would almost do, you know, pricing. That wasn't based manually, which is that if we saw that, okay, this price sale was performing, you know, 20% was performing much better than 30%, even though we were giving away a higher percentage of that sale, you know, the pricing would automatically switch to that. So everything was based on data.
How much would you say, well, let me rephrase that actually. How much, this is a loaded question, Manny, how much is too much data?
that's a fantastic question. I mean, you're talking to someone who's a data nerd, you know, who's extremely analytical. I'm a guy that loves data, and I think one thing that I've learned over my career, sort of working on more the analysis, operation, strategy, you know, essentially execution side, is sometimes you do get bogged down in, you know, what's called, you know, analysis paralysis, you know, which is you essentially, you're crunching just way too much numbers to essentially, you need to make a decision. So, you know, what I ultimately say, which is that, you know, at a certain point is, you know, we have the data, we have choices 1, 2, and 3. Like, we just have to make the decision. Like, we don't have a choice there. So, you know, to the answer to your question it does get challenging when you're taking in so much data. So, as a matter of fact, Zynga had the largest data warehouse outside of Wall Street. So everyone thought we were a gaming company. We were really an analytics company that was masquerading as a gaming platform. You know, we used spreadsheets more than we used game development tools, I would say, as well. But, you know, at a certain point, you know, we had weekly and monthly OKRs or deliverables. So for us, it wasn't a question of, you know, do we have enough data? It was always, we have too much data. We need to make a decision by 5 p.m. today for our meeting for tomorrow morning. So we were just forced to do it by time.
So Manny, if someone said you only have one thing you can measure and one way to measure it, what would it be? What would be your preference?
I mean, I don't think there's a universal answer for that metric. I mean, I think it depends, you know, across the board what you're selling. Like, are you selling a service, you know, a SaaS product? You know, what's your user retention rate? You know, what's your monthly recurring revenue over time? Is that growing? Are you essentially, I mean, most importantly, are your users happy? Are they paying you that monthly subscription service? Then, you know, are you selling, you know, physical goods? Like, are you keeping up with hardware? Are you keeping up with, you know, essentially the innovation in this space? But for me, you know, I think what it always boils down to is, you know, at Zynga, our main, I guess, metric was NPS, which is Net Promoter Score. And that's become a big thing in the Valley, which is, okay, how much is someone willing to talk about your product? So if I would have to say, you know, one universal metric that is the most important thing to me, I think it always comes back to customer satisfaction, which is, you know, you go have an experience 10 times, it's great. You're not really going to write about it. But you have that one bad experience at a restaurant, you go write about it on Yelp review, and you know that ruins the restaurant score for that day. So, you know, people remember that one bad experience more so than the 20 good experiences they have. And, you know, I'm extremely customer loyal. You know, I drink a lot of Red Bull a day. So Red Bull, that's another shout out for you. I need another case, please, sent to my house. But, you know, I've spent over at least, I mean, let's not even consider, you know, at the clubs and entertaining guests, the Red Bull vodka, but for just caffeine alone, I've probably spent at least $10,000-$15,000 over the last 20 years of my life. And, you know, if no product comes out that's, you know, that gives me that same boost, or nootropics that are going out, you know, they have my money. And that same goes for cell phones, and same goes for cars and things like that. So I'm a brand loyalist. So I think customer satisfaction is the most important metric for me.
You know, that Red Bull's not going to help you with that 100 hours of, you know, no sleep.
That's very, very true.
Yeah, and you and I both know how valuable WOM, or word of mouth, is to an organization. And it's so important. It's vital to solicit your own network to get more users into a game. What are some of the advantages and disadvantages of soliciting or crowdsourcing your friends for, say, in-game incentives?
Yeah, that's a that's an interesting question, especially I think Zynga pioneered, if that's the right word, the notion of virality and sort of getting your friends to help spread the message. I mean, look, at the end of the day, you know, Zynga, we didn't have our own platform. We were completely 100% reliable on Zuckerberg's platform, which turns out to be the largest platform in the world with over a billion users now, you know, which is Facebook. So, you know, for us is, you know, we used what Mark had already created, which is internally, which is that, you know, what's the best way to connect, you know, my friends and my network, stay in touch with them, see what their updates are, see what their latest dog pictures are. They just had a baby, and here's the 800th picture for the first month that you're going to see. So he cracked that sort of mystery of how to stay connected. And, you know, the algorithmic feed is, okay, well, I tend to engage more with this friend, so I'm going to see that person's news or photos more so in my news feed than someone else's that I don't click on. So Mark in Facebook, he already created that. So we just took what he had already built and built something on top of that, which is, okay, you know, ask ask your friends, or as some people may say, spam all 800 of your Facebook friends for, hey, I need a new shovel, you know, to hit my 10 goals so I can build this tractor and get do a little faster plowing on my farm in Farmville. So again, long answer to your question is it how important is word of mouth? I think word of mouth and, you know, that, I mean, I think, you know, Mark being said that for decades now is, you know, customer satisfaction reviews, word of mouth is how people essentially get, you know, buy products and it is their most trusted review versus a commercial or branded content or, you know, or an actual review written by your tech reviewer as well. So I think word of mouth is extremely important. I think customer satisfaction is very important. However, on the flip side is, you know, if you take that notion of, okay, your friend has to do an action so you can complete an action in the game, which was basically what a lot of Zynga's early games, especially Farmville, was early on. You know, it was extremely incentive, ask your friend heavy, to use that political correct term. So I think with that, you just need to be careful because I think we got dinged on that relatively early on.
You always want to look your best, but you don't always have time to deal with a necktie that won't cooperate. That's where we come in. Introducing the NeverTie, the only necktie that you never have to tie. Each NeverTie comes with a tie and two removable knots that you simply slide on and adjust for your comfort, giving you the perfect look every time. Choose from over 20 stylish designs at thenevertie.com.
You know, that shovel that you mentioned provides intangible value to the user. And if it takes me to spam 800 of my closest friends on Facebook or other social platforms to get that shovel, I just might do it. What are some of the behaviors or motivations for a user or an individual to want to possess an intangible brand item? So say, you know, a Big Mac from McDonald's or be an Amex user in an alternate reality.
Yeah, no, that's a fantastic question. I would say, you know, if I ever do write a book on how, you know, the gaming industry, I would say one of the biggest questions and, you know, the top questions I've gotten over, you know, over years and, you know, over a decade plus is, wait a second. So someone is paying money. So their avatar in the game is not wearing a blue shirt, but a red robe. They're paying $5 for that. Like, that concept is still so crazy to people that they don't understand that people spend real money for something that they can't touch. It's something completely intangible. And the way that I say is that, okay, well, how much did you spend for your Jets game you went to this weekend? Okay, you spent over $100 each per ticket. You spent, you know, X amount of dollars for parking. You probably spent $10 per beer at the stadium. I mean, that was maybe, you know, $1,000 you spent this on just to go into your football game. So, you know, why I believe that, you know, no one really has a right to judge someone else, you know, just for many reasons, but, you know, it's a form of entertainment. So I think that's the biggest thing for people to get across. Right now in esports, you know, there are gambling sites where you can basically, you know, pay real money to essentially gamble to win skins, and skin is essentially just a different color or a different design for your guns in games like Counter-Strike. That gambling industry for essentially changing the color of your gun, which doesn't make your gun any better, doesn't make you any faster, it's just like wearing a red shirt versus a blue shirt. I mean, that's a multi-billion-dollar industry. I mean, EA alone is going to make over $1 billion on in-game purchases this year within Madden and FIFA. So it's a very hard concept to understand if that's not something you like to do. But I always just go back to, okay, tell me what you like. Okay, you like golf? So you're going to spend $35 on a leather golf club versus $10. Why is that? Like, you're going to spend this much on this per golf ball versus this golf ball that's going to make you go 10 yards faster, or you like Callaway shirt versus Nike shirt. It's the same thing, is that, you know, gaming is a form of entertainment, and people still don't realize that the gaming industry makes more money than the movie industry and the music industry combined. So when you look at celebrities, you know, we look at them as the superstars, but, you know, gaming is really, you know, the next truly global sport and, you know, one of the biggest industries out there right now.
You mentioned that Nike shirt. So if I had, you know, a personality in an alternate reality and I want to have that Nike shirt, I can't just, as a developer, I can't just put that swoosh onto that shirt because there's still intellectual property concerns in alternate reality. And we've learned that from, you know, recent case law that's coming about with lawsuits. So what would make for, say, a successful partnership? Because obviously, if you wanted that swoosh, you'd have to partner with Nike or a competing organization to have their brand on your game. What would make a successful partnership between the gaming organization and the brand that wants to have their brand associated on that gaming platform?
So I'll give you two different examples. So one is that, you know, going back to my days at Zynga or EA or Xbox, gamers will always do something. There's a couple of traits that you need to know about the gaming audience. One is they will always love free stuff. Like, you give them anything free, they will absolutely love that. So, you know, which is like, hey, buy a Dr. Pepper, and underneath the cap, there's a code to get, again, a free uniform or a free gun skin color. They love free stuff, so that's always a huge trait. The next thing that they are is they're completionists, you know? So what they like to do is, for example, if there's 10 items in the game or you need to complete this quest, they're very big on completing something. So that's another reason why that association with that virtual item is very key. So for the two examples I'll give is one from the brand side is, okay, if McDonald's is going to have a farm inside Farmville for one day only, and then you can get a McDonald's truck, or for example, a farmer's insurance is going to have a one-day-only farm where you get the farmer's insurance blimp, which then if you use it 3 times a month, you know, it'll protect your farm from drought or whatever it may be. So, you know, those are actions where it's a reward to the brand for them getting the obviously engagement and the happiness. And then, hey, fans are like, oh, awesome, McDonald's, thank you for this. Or, oh, hey, you know, farmer's insurance, we love you for that. And then, you know, the users get the love, the brand partnership gets the love, and then obviously, from the game publisher side, there's the economics of selling that from a branding and advertising perspective. And on the flip side is now what you're seeing is actual, you know, esports teams. Like, you know, I'll say that again, like there are teams made up of professional video game players. There are many of them, you know, bought now by professional teams as well. The Miami Heat invested in a team. The Dodgers Wizards group, Axiomatic, recently invested in a team. The 76ers bought 2 teams. There have been 30 professional teams in Europe that have now sponsored or invested in esports teams as well. So from that side is then, you know, you're talking about the team, like, for example, you know, in LA, you obviously the Dodgers and Lakers are very popular, but then you look at the team like Team Liquid or Cloud9, which are also very popular esports teams. Now you could sell that merchandise inside the game. For example, a Team Liquid or C9 gun skin, or for example, a shirt inside the game. And I ran into someone at Starbucks, and you know, we just started talking, and you know, he has purchased every single virtual item for every player for one of his favorite teams that he likes. His team happens to be Ukrainian. He's like, I've paid $1 for each of the 5 stickers, and I'll pay $5 for the team sticker when it comes out. So, you know, there's a huge opportunity there on the virtual side. You know, once you wrap your head around that, it's just entertainment like anything else.
If I was to say, Manny, go in this closet and I was to lock you in there for, say, 3 days, and you couldn't come out until you had, you know, written your book. And earlier you mentioned that you could write a book with all this content, and that's probably accurate. So when should we expect your book?
Well, let's see. I mean, I have to get the 4 other companies I'm working on off the ground first. But, you know, I do sort of, you know, write daily basis on the next level for, you know, the business side of it. But, you know, on a personal side, you know, I try to do some writing as well, just in terms of what it's like, you know, starting a company from scratch, doing it by yourself, and, you know, putting into that. So, you know, I'd love for a book to come out, you know, I would say within the next 2 years is probably, you know, my target right now. But the thing that I want to focus on is not only, you know, just from a business side, I think there's plenty of business books out there, and there are people much smarter than me and much more experienced than me that can provide better experience. I think what I want to show is much more, you know, which is the human side and the human toll, which is that, you know, if you want to build something from scratch and if you really want to work for yourself, which is, you know, the most rewarding thing and also the most stressful thing, and you do your lack of sleep, is, you know, you need to be prepared for what are you willing to give up, you know. So for example, Friday night comes around, I get all my tweets and messages and texts from my friends like, yo, we're going out, we're at this bar, woo, Friday. I'm like, I love Friday nights because, you know, that's when I get my most productive night of the week is Friday nights, because everyone takes time off and goes out to dinner and, you know, does enjoyable things, and I get work done. And, you know, I love the weekends and love Sunday because, you know, I can just get 12 hours of work done as well. So I think, you know, when that book finally comes out, you know, I want to focus on really more the human experience side and the toll, and then knowing that, hey, you know, even though you may think it's the best idea and you're going to put your heart and soul into it, there's a 95.8% chance that you're going to fail, and what that feels like on a daily basis. So, you know, I think that's the focus that I'm trying to do. So let's aim for 2 years, since you gave me that, you gave me the ETA I need to deliver on now.
You're on the clock now, so you have 2 years from the publishing of this podcast. We're going to follow up with you.
I will, for sure.
What are some books that have influenced you, you know, whether as a young adult or even recently?
Wow. You know, I would say, let me, I'll answer the question in two different ways. One is, I read a lot in general. So I probably just consume just a lot of just media, much more than the average person. So I would say my time is spent between, you know, one third completely focused on esports, you know, 50% focused on esports, 25% probably focused on world politics and issues, and 25%, you know, focused on pop culture. So I tend to read, so if I read books, I tend to read, you know, mostly, you know, nonfiction. So, you know, I just recently finished Dreamland, which is about, you know, the opiate crisis in Ohio and sort of what's going on there and sort of what can be done from a solution. So I don't generally read business books, because I get a lot of my business information from people that, you know, I think are successful and doing well. You know, Gary Vaynerchuk is a huge influence for me. So he puts out a ton of content. So, you know, watching a Daily V is very, very important for me. But if I would say, you know, what I tell my athletes, you know, the people, the players on my esports team that I have, is there's three things that I basically give them. I say, okay, if I want you to watch this, you know, watch Gary V's videos, his motivation, essentially watch Daily V anytime you can. It's less than 10 minutes. Two, listen to this. Even if you don't like hip hop, you know, just listen to the words or find the lyrics, is listen to Jay-Z's first album, which is Reasonable Doubt. Because it, you know, a lot of people say it's all, hey, it's just about drug dealing. But if you listen closely, it is probably one of the best sources of business advice that can be given, which is that, you know, no, nothing's going to be given to you for free. You got to go out there and hustle. You got to do this every single day. There are dangers around every corner. People are out there going to get you, and, you know, nothing's going to make it unless you believe in yourself and hard work. And I think that's what he answers. And then to actually answer your question, book, the one book that I recommend is, and it's not a recent book. It was written, I think, in the 14th century, which is Machiavelli's The Prince, you know, because, yeah, you know, when you read that book, you know, I mean, the key learning from that book is essentially, you know, do the ends justify the means? And, you know, I think it's a core value that anyone has to ask in either life, love, or business, you know, which is, you know, do the ends justify the means? And so that's a book I always recommend that people read, just to get a basis of, is what you're doing providing the ROI and the investment of where you want to go to 5, 10, 20 years from now?
You know, Jay-Z does own several businesses, and he can be considered a professional in business. Or, however, that is probably the first time I've heard anyone reference a hip-hop or a rap album for business advice. And I'm sure there's really good content in there, and you have a really good take on it. So
I would say people, you know, underestimate the hip-hop industry, because, I mean, if you look at love the artists today is they've realized that, you know, why are they putting out free albums? Why does Drake just release new songs? Because, you know, he's making money through Nike, through Apple, through other partnerships. And, you know, realize is the music industry, you're not going to make your money selling CDs anymore. You got to think outside of that model. And I think hip hop, you know, the way they've embraced social media, the way they embrace Twitter first, you know, what they do on Instagram, I think it's really interesting to follow. And I'll end with this, what Jay-Z's line is like, he says, "I'm not a businessman, I am business, comma, man." So, you know, I'll give it up to Jay, you know, I mean, and if Apple's going to buy a Tidal for $500 million, you know, he's a smart guy.
What is next for Manny?
Well, what's next for me? I would like to get some sleep in the next year. I think that's the first thing on the agenda.
Quit the Red Bull.
Quit the Red Bull and quit running five companies by myself. But hopefully what's next for me is there'll be some announcements in the next, hopefully, month or so on company number 4, which will be launching in the esports space, which I think will be very interesting. And the partners we have lined up and some of the investors, I think is going to be really interesting in this space. And we'll be happy to talk about that later. But the biggest thing I think is going to happen for me is working on a larger partnership to essentially combine everything I'm building in the esports ecosystem and essentially bring that into a larger company and say, hey, you know, it's really helped drive this industry forward and across your different divisions and areas and platforms you play in, you know, let's work together on that. So that's next for me. And hopefully within the next 2 months, I'll be able to smile and actually get a peaceful night's sleep in the last 1 year and 1 week, not that I'm counting since I've slept last, but I'm enjoying myself, so I can't complain.
Right. Only do it if you're having fun. If you're not having fun, don't do it. So I support that. I'm a huge advocate of that.
Absolutely.
Manny, it's been an absolute pleasure having you with us today. If the listeners want to get in contact with you, how could they reach you?
Yeah, absolutely. So my website, The Next Level, is tnl.media. My Twitter is just at Mannyonikal, MannyAnikal. And I'll give you my email. It's it's manny@tnl.media. I'm happy to always give, you know, someone 5-10 minutes of my time just because no one ever gave me that. And I always believe in giving back. So feel free to reach out if you have any questions and happy to talk to anyone out there.
Manny, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on. And you have a great rest of your week.
You too. Listeners, thanks for listening to The Clicksuasion. Go ahead and subscribe to wherever you get your podcasts from. And we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to Clicksuasion. Subscribe to the podcast, read our research, and get in touch with us at clicksuasion.com. You can also find us on Twitter with the handle @clicksuasion.